to the John Gambling Show with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
It's the Albany legislature here that's at fault, not the unions.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg on the John Gambling Show.
There's some things we have to have taxes for, and that's fine, but you just have to stand up and say some of these things we can't afford.
Now, with New York's only local news talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
The mayor of this great city, Michael Bloomberg, is here. The mayor recently announced some news, made some news by announcing he's going to be rewriting the rules and running for a third term, which caused Bill Clinton to say, "You can do that."
Yes, indeed. Mr. Mayor, welcome aboard on our Friday, and good morning. You looked smashing in your white tie.
It was nice. There's only a couple of events a year that are white tie in New York if you sit on the dais. I think the Friendly Sons of the Irish. The Irish seem to like white tie. And the Al Smith dinner is a dinner. Actually, Al Smith IV is the MC. It was his great-grandfather, I guess.
Obama had a great line about that, too.
He did. It's traditionally everybody makes jokes about each other. And, Al Smith was the first Catholic to run for president and didn't win. Anti-Catholicism in those days was actually quite prevalent in this country.
Even through Kennedy.
Most people are too young to remember, but that's exactly right. Everybody kept saying, well, will a pope tell him what to do? And I found it sad when Mitt Romney was running. You know, it was exactly the same thing. Sure, and, you know, are the elders of the church going to tell him? I think religion does not belong as one of the criteria. Presidents will act independently. They can have their beliefs, but then they live in multiple worlds. We all do. They can believe one thing, but they have a responsibility to the public, and it may be in conflict with their religion, but their job is to, for the public, do one thing and then practice their own religion privately the way they want to.
So did you get a chance to talk with either of the candidates or both?
Oh, yeah, both of them. I sat between Al Smith IV's wife, Nan, and Cindy McCain, who's very pleasant and I've known for a while. And both the two senators, worked the podium and shook hands with everybody. But I know both, and we chit-chatted.
What poor so-and-so gets stuck with putting the place names down? I can't imagine.
Al Smith and the Cardinal probably have the final say in all of this.
That has to be.
Had one on one side, one on the other. And, you know, listen, they worked in the Senate together, the two senators. They're fierce competitors. One's going to win, one's not going to win. But they'll have to work together afterwards. One as president, one as a senator.
All right. It has been a week since you and I have had the opportunity to sit together, and a lot has happened. Let's talk about things financial. The stock market keeps going up and down, whipsawing everybody left and right. Where do you think we are a week after since last Friday?
Warren Buffett the other day said that, I think it was yesterday, that he thought this was a unique opportunity to make long-term investments. I happen to agree with that. I think if you have $100 in cash, put 20% of it in, buy mutual fund right now. A month from now, put another 20% in, buy a mutual fund. If it's lower, you'll be averaging down. If it's higher, you've got a profit built in. Do that. And history will show that most companies are going to stay in business, and most companies are trading at very low values. I've looked at companies that have gone from 60 to 10, the stock, and they're great brand names, they're great companies that will be around for decades. And I think there's a number of things happening here. One is the stock market. For a long-term investor, there is great value. You got to believe in America. You just have to, and that's what you are doing when you buy stocks. Two, the volatility is a technical thing. I suspect the volatility is near an end, but I can't predict any more than anybody else. A lot of this comes from hedge funds and mutual funds thinking that, the Joe the plumber is going to take some money out of the stock market at the end of the year, or college endowments are having to sell stocks because they need the money and they don't have a lot of liquidity. And a lot of that's the volatility. The real problem is the fundamental economy, and all economic indicators point to a year or two of very tough times coming forward. You'll get all these things the Fed and the Treasury are doing and the central banks around the world. They are helping. It takes a while. We pass a bill and or they announce a program. Everybody says next day it should solve all the problems. Not going to do that. But over a period of time, it will loosen up the credits. Bank will start loaning again. But the truth of the matter is people are worried. And if you don't buy a car, then the car salesman doesn't make their commission. The car mechanic doesn't have a car to work on. The automobile worker in Detroit loses his or her job. And it's that kind of fear that we have right now. And it's moving down to the more broad public from the financial institution panic. We had a financial institution lack of confidence. Now we're going through this. And it's you talk to restaurateurs and they are worried. People are buying cheaper wines or not going out or not ordering desserts. It's hard to sell your house because the guy that wants to buy it can't get a mortgage, or to buy one because you can't get a mortgage.
Or can't sell his house to move up, trade up or
absolutely.
Down.
Absolutely. You know, we're sort of frozen. People are worried about their jobs. I made a list the other day of friends of mine who I want to call, and I've got to have about half through the list, who have retired. And I don't know whether they're, you know, I'm sure they've lost some money because they would have invested their retirement funds in mutual funds or stocks. And I can't urge enough, don't buy individual stocks. I don't care what Jim Cramer says. Buy mutual funds. It's just you need the diversity. One of the first rules of, and most important rules of investing is to, after having a long-term perspective, it is to have the diversity that a big mutual fund, whether it's an exchange-traded one or a closed-end fund or whatever, but a mutual fund gives you diversity. Anyways, I think that people, some of my friends probably have lost some of their retirement income, maybe a significant part of it, and hopefully they're okay. But you know, let me point it to you. While all the news isn't bad, and we got to put this in perspective, there are 8,000 fewer jobs, fewer people working in New York City between August and September. 8,000 tragedies, and I'll tell you what we're trying to do to help them. I'll come back to that in a second. But it's still true that more people are working in September than a year ago September. So, you know, there are more jobs created. The trouble is there's 8,000 people that we've got to figure out some ways to help them to get back to work. And we have our business development centers. Remember a guy named Rob Walsh? We combined a couple of agencies, if you remember, the Department of Employment and the Department of Small Business Services a while ago, back maybe in 2003, thereabouts. And there was a lot of criticism. And what the result is, we used to put 400 people to work every quarter. Now we put over 4,000 people to work. We have these.
What sort of jobs are involved here? Do you know?
Good jobs, small businesses. That's mm-hmm. what they work on. I talked to a guy yesterday from a very big fashion company in Paris who was here. They want to do some philanthropic stuff in New York City. They sell a lot here. But he was talking, they sell expensive watches. You can't find a watchmaker. They sell expensive leather goods. People aren't around to repair it. So there are jobs being created all the time, or needs, and what we've got to do is find ways to train people for those jobs. I did an event with the Small Business Services at one of their centers, and this woman and her husband opened a store to sell organic vegetables. She's already got a dozen people working, going to have five more by the end of the year, projects 25 down the road. Who knows whether they get to that or not. But we have put to an awful lot of people to work, something like 60,000 people since 2003 we've gotten jobs for. Now, there are other ways to get jobs, but 50% of the people in New York City work in small businesses. That's where the growth is.
Is this a department that is open on an everyday basis that people can walk into? How do they
access? Absolutely.
We have seven access.
We have seven career centers, just like everything else in the city.
311.
311 will tell you how to do it, or nyc.gov. But they have seven centers, and they try to match small businesses with people looking for jobs. They also try to help small businesses get going. But small business people don't know how to fill out a application for a loan to make it really attractive. You know, which things should be in there? What things should you talk about? And I said to this woman who was who gave a little talk, and she and her husband, you know, listening to her, look, you've done this, this, and this. If I were a banker, that would give me a great deal of confidence that you and your husband are going to make that company work. And it's that kind of stuff. Somebody said, oh, you should lie. The one thing you should never do is lie on these applications.
They're going to find out. Exactly.
But it's also unethical. But the real answer is there are a lot of things that you might not think about that we can help you with, tell you what to put on the application, where do you go to find ways to deal with the city. The city gives out an enormous amount of business. How do you write a business plan? Where do you go to find office space or factory space? I've told a story before. Oscar De La Renta, who I think is one of the geniuses of the fashion world, is opening up and bought a company up in the Bronx. And I said, why? And he said, because the seamstresses here are the best in the world. They're close to where he needs them. If he wants to move that bow from one side to the other,
they're there.
They're there. And do it quickly. And the unions have really helped because they understand they've got to do something to keep jobs here and get better jobs. And so they've worked with him, and he's expanding up there. That's happening throughout the city. We're going to go through some tough times, but the solution for us is to not sit back and wring our hands and say, oh, my God, I've got to do that as well to balance the budget. But we've got to do something to help people. And guys like Rob Walsh and all these people that work for this part of the city government really are doing it.
All right, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, and his usual chair on a Friday John Gambling show. Stay where you are, Mr. Mayor. We'll get right back to you. Don't forget, we're 23 minutes after 8 o'clock. We've talked about the recession. It seems to be a foregone conclusion that we will be in one for some time. How is it going to affect you? Christine Quinn talking about service cutbacks, this, that, and the other thing.
Well, I've said we have balanced the budget for fiscal 09, and we're a quarter of the way through it pretty much, although our tax revenue is actually coming in a little bit less than what we had predicted. We had predicted down 12% on the economically sensitive taxes of business and sales and income. Down 12%. It's a little bit worse, but you can't tell quarter to quarter. You got to wait and see whether that's a trend or not. So we have a little bit of a deficit for 09. For 2010, we've always said that the 7% reduction for last year, we try to keep it going through this year, but certainly not going to keep it going next year. And the question is, what do you do? What are alternative funding sources? There's the Indian reservation cigarette taxes. I mean, there are a variety of things that you can do. It doesn't have to be taxes, but taxes are certainly, you can't say, read my lips, no new taxes.
How about income taxes, personal income taxes,
that's
citywide?
Up to the state. We have no say in any of that. I'll get to the state in a second. For us, the first thing we do is try to find ways to do more with less, and I've asked every agency to come back with cuts of 2.5% for the rest of this year, which goes till next June 30th, and 5% for next year.
Have you seen any of those reports yet?
Yeah. Mark Page, our office manager in budget, is working with each one. You got to make sure that they are the cuts that you want to do. I mean, nobody wants to cut. But you have to decide which things are most important. Traditionally, what a commissioner might do, I'd never accuse them of doing this, but let me rephrase this. There's an allegation they would cut the things in their proposal that would get the most people to the steps of City Hall to protest the quickest. Yeah, well, that was...
You've heard those stories.
I've heard those. I'm a little bit more mature today than back when. We're not going to do that. We will find ways to give the public the same kind of services, pretty much the same, maybe even better in some cases, but to do it more efficiently. I'm just never convinced that a good manager can't always find more savings but still provide the services. I don't think that's going to be enough, and we're going to have to do some revenue stuff as well. But even with what we've projected for 2010, we have a $2 billion deficit. And so we're going to have to find things over and above the 2.5 and 5 and possibly an increase in the property tax.
All right. Back in the 70s, when we had another financial crisis here in the city, services did get cut. Snow removal and trash removal. And things
crime
of that.
And that sort of thing.
Right.
That's why it lasted decades. That was exactly the wrong thing to do. You cannot walk away from making investments in the bad times. You cannot walk away from having a workforce that is reasonably well paid, as much as municipal government will allow, because they're the ones that are going to work you out of this. You can't walk away from all the things that make your city attractive, because that's the tax base. If people move out or don't come here as tourists, you're not going to have a future, and it's going to take a long time. It's like, you don't maintain the bridges. Eventually, you have to replace them. it would have been a lot cheaper to maintain them. Now, it's very tough when times are tough to invest in things with a payback's way down the road. It's very tough to keep things going when you know, everybody says, "Oh, well, you know, you could, we don't need all those services," but we do need most of them. Everybody talks when they're running for office, "I'm going to cut out waste." Well, your waste is my key program. My key program is your key program's my waste, and there's very little inefficiency. The good news is, although it makes it tougher to balance the budget, the 300,000 employees that work for New York City, almost all of them work hard, are flexible, and really make a difference in this city. Now, if we
how
can't
do you know if that's the right number? 300,000.
Well, every agency, when you say you've got you got to cut 2.5% and keep the services going, you got to cut 5% and keep the services going. You let the agencies have to decide that. You can't centralize that. They're the ones that know, and you can hold them accountable for providing services. I'll give you a good example. When we came into office, Ray Kelly and I sat down. And I said, "Look, we just cannot afford the number of cops we have." So we reduced the number of cops by 3,000 cops. And Ray Kelly brought crime down. Now, you can't keep reducing cops and not have crime
some
effect,
go up. Right.
Right. But there are ways to do it, and it is, how do you do it? Well, great management, great training, and very hard work from our police officers who buckle down. You know, the municipal workforce and their unions, they understand. They go to live here. They send their kids to our schools. They go to our cultural institutions and our parks. It's their jobs. They have as big a vested interest as anybody in terms of making the city work. And they do. I mean, not all the time. It's always a battle here and there, and everybody wants to have the other guy make the cuts and not them. But, we are very – this city is lucky. I would argue that the union leadership in this city is – progressive and understanding. Last night I had a lot of talks with union leaders that are up on the dais. They understand what's happening in this city and in this country, and they are working with the city.
Do we expect too much from the city? We New Yorkers, I mean, is there an expectation that is maybe
well,
out of
the programs
reality?
That I care about, no, your programs
exactly.
are too much. I mean, that is...
It's like my representative is perfect the rest of my
right.
office.
I mean, right. You know, some things are... let me rephrase this. There's some things that everybody would agree on. Public education, safe streets, guys and women to put out fires, pick up the trash, and keep our prisoners in jail. If you say, well, okay, those things everybody will agree we need, that's 80% of your budget. I mean, but now we can talk about everything else, and it's a small percentage.
You know what I did this week and had just a most wonderful time? I took a ride on the Staten Island Ferry.
It's a great service.
Over and back, absolutely free. And there were so many tourists. I mean, most
absolutely.
Of the people when I was there were tourists. And the passing of the Statue of Liberty and the return trip looking at Lower Manhattan, you should see these people's faces light
when
up.
I came to New York in 1966... I didn't have any money. I worked for, I think, $9,000 a year, which was not bad in those days, but it was, didn't
you've
leave
got,
you with
you've
a lot.
You've come a long way, baby.
Paid, I think it was either $120 or $140, I can't remember which, for my one-room studio apartment that I lived in for 10 years. But a date was you'd buy a six-pack of beer and a pizza, and you'd take the Staten Island Ferry over and back. It was a nickel in those days, but if you stayed on at the other end, you could take it back, as I remember. I mean, it was so long ago. But it's a romantic ride. And during the day, you're right, it's flooded with tourists.
It really is. It was a wonderful experience. Yeah. It really was. All right, we reached the half hour. When we come back, we'll talk about the hearings in City Hall yesterday over the term limits. More of those today. That will be our topic when we come back. But on the half hour... Continue here on the Friday John Gambling Show, 23 before 9 o'clock. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, you'll be up in just a little bit here with your questions at 800-321-0710. I saw you with Bernadette Peters yesterday in Times Square.
Yes, Bernadette, she's a phenomenal actress, phenomenal singer.
And real New Yorker, too.
Bubbly and nice and... I was thrilled there was a picture in the paper with, I don't know how Diana's going to feel about that. Actually, Diana likes her.
So. I'm not sure it had to do with you. I think it had to do with
her. Is that right?
I think it had to do with her.
I'm shocked. I'm disappointed. I'm devastated.
I understand you've got some tickets that you'd like to give away.
Absolutely. TKTS, first night of the theater. In Father Duffy Square, which is part of Times Square. People get confused, but Duffy Square is part of Times Square. And they, after a long time, but it was well worth it, TKTS has this new home. On one edge, one side, the southern side, there are lots of windows where you can come up and buy tickets that have not been sold. It's the last, you get them at the last minute, half price, basically. On the other side, there's this sloping set of benches, the only way to describe it, tiered down.
Like a bleacher.
A bleacher is a good way to phrase it, better description, of red glass that is just stunning, and it gives you a chance to sit there and look at Times Square with all the lights and the traffic and the, you know, it's always fun to do an event in the middle of the square because there's always a tourist bus go by and they yell, hey, mayor, hey, mayor. But also there's going to be this, thanks to the participation of a whole bunch of New York City's diverse and dynamic theater companies, more than 8,000 free tickets to Broadway made available to new and non-traditional audiences from the five boroughs over the next 2 weeks. More than 100 theaters throughout the city are participating in this free night of theater. It was started, actually, in 2005. You remember that well?
I'm afraid I don't.
Well, trust me, we talked about it then. As a three-city pilot program in Austin, Texas, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, San Francisco, California. And now there are 600 theaters in 120 cities, and they're offering more than 50,000 tickets. And how do you get them?
That was my next question.
FreeNightNYC.net.
Free night.
FreeNightNYC.net.
All right.
But if you call 311, they'll probably tell you. I think so.
All right. Your office last evening, yesterday afternoon, City Council, not your office specifically, but City Hall, hearing on term limits, which got pretty raucous, I understand.
A lot of people coming testify. The city charter provides for a number of things. It provides for the City Council to change the charter. It provides for public hearings. It provides for a lot of things that make this city what it is. And you saw democracy at work yesterday. A lot of people had a chance to say what they wanted. You know, people who've been there and have a lot of experience, like Mario Cuomo and Ed Koch, testified. And, you know, these are people who've watched government over the years and really have a good perspective on what works and what doesn't. It was interesting listening to them. And then there were people who just, you know, they emote. They just want to say what they want to say. Whether or not it, if you explain to them what they're really saying, the implications, maybe they're right, maybe they're wrong. But it's a good chance for everybody to feel part of democracy. And then the City Council will take a vote.
They take a vote next week, correct?
Yep.
Are you confident that it will go?
Never confident in anything. You always have to keep working. This is a bill the administration submitted, and we're working very hard to get it passed. Christine Quinn has been very supportive, and I'm cautiously optimistic is a nice way to phrase it, but you never take anything in an election for granted. We saw that before. I mean, how many times a candidate guaranteed to be the winner and doesn't turn out to be?
You were in California. You flew to California on a voting issue, on a referendum.
In California, they have redistricted the state such that the party, you know, the Republicans and Democrats, wink, wink, decide who'll get which districts. They redraw the lines so that they will never really ever have a chance of losing their seats, wink, wink. Call it democracy, but it isn't. And Schwarzenegger has this Proposition 11, and I've never seen a proposition with as much support. They had support, the AARP, the ACLU, the NAACP.
This is not
the legal,
to do that. Not to do the
funky. Not to do it. To have an independent commission. The only people that are opposed to the independent commission are the existing legislators up in Sacramento, which is where their state capital is. And Schwarzenegger had asked me, would I help? And I said, yes, I think it's good for California. That's what his interest is. I think it's good for the country. I hope if it works there, then maybe someday our legislature would take a look, or the public would demand that our legislature take a look and do exactly the same thing, because otherwise you disenfranchise everybody.
Is this one of the components that keeps the same old faces in the same old seats?
When I was out there, I talked at a luncheon, talked at a dinner, fundraisers, talked to the press, and I said, you know, the California state legislature has an approval rating of something like 14%.
Well, it's better than Congress's. That's 10.
Okay. And yet virtually everybody gets reelected. Out of the last, I don't know, 400 elections, people running one lost their seat. I think they died in office or something. You had to do that to lose. You can't lose because of the redistricting. And that's true in Albany as well, incidentally. And there's some very good legislators in Albany and very good legislators in Sacramento. But the truth of the matter is, the way the system works, the public doesn't get a chance. And if you think about it, instead of the public picking legislators, the system has been so changed around, now legislators are picking voters. And that's not democracy. And so they have something like 2,000 groups supporting this Proposition 11 in California. And when we have asked Schwarzenegger to come and do something for New York City, things where we've put together groups trying to raise money for the Mayor's Fund or a variety of things, Schwarzenegger has every time been willing to do it. So when he asked me, I thought, you know.
How are the issues different, the New York issue of term limits and that? Are they different?
Term limits gives you more choice. More people can run. The current people, myself included, who would be term limited out, can be on the ballot. So the public will have anybody that wanted to run before can still run. And some new people can still run, people who would not otherwise have been able to do it. In California, it's not saying who can be or can't be on the ballot. It's what you're doing is you're trying to weight the ballot, the primary, so much to a particular group that the ideologues will control it, a very small number of people. And then when you get to the general election, it's a joke because there's no real competition. If you change term limits, in theory, you give people more ability, more competition, more choice. There is an argument for term limits. I've always, in some senses, liked term limits and said so publicly. Difference between 2 and 3, you can make the case that 3 gives you a little more time. You can also make the case, incidentally, that you don't need more than 3, since I don't think there's ever been a mayor in New York City who's served more than 3. Anybody that's tried, Ed Koch did and didn't get reelected. You could argue that we don't even need term limits for the president of the United States. Just think about, in our lifetime, how many presidents didn't get reelected after one term, or how many after two would not have gotten reelected because their popularity was so low. There is the argument that term limits just take away the choice, and the public's smart enough to throw them out when they're bored with them, tired of them, or they don't do a good job. But I think there is a place for term
Mario
limits.
Mario Cuomo yesterday in his testimony suggested that term limits works because I got voted out. Well, I was sent home.
Non-term limits work. Non-term limits work. Yeah. And Ed Koch, the same thing.
Let me ask you about Coney Island. Here the city wants to buy up. I think they're looking at 11 acres.
Here's the issue.
Total.
We think that Coney Island should have an amusement park. It's part of New York City. It's been there forever. And it helps all of the property values in the area. It gets
tourists
to come.
Why can't we find some big amusement company to come in and do it?
That's not the problem. The problem is that the land, part of it is owned by a guy who wants to develop and doesn't want to have an amusement park. He wants condos, and that's fine. Part of it is now the city's bought another piece, so we have enough land. I don't know, it's not enough yet, but it helps us in terms of putting together what you'd need. And we've talked to the guy that owns the other land, trying to work out something, and maybe we can. Where he can build, we'll change some zoning so that he gets some things on the land he already owns in return for selling us the piece we need for the amusement park. We've tried to do that. I think some people say a strategy is to wait until the next administration comes in. If you change term limits, and if I were to get reelected, which is presumptuous to assume, but let's assume for a second it happened, he'd have a lot longer to wait, and presumably he'd be more willing to deal. But I don't know that to be the case. I've never talked to him. You know, our economic development group is trying to work with him, and I'm very sympathetic to him. It's his property. We've got to find some ways so that everybody comes out a winner.
So you're saying that you have if you can get the land, you've got an operator. I mean, you've got somebody to build.
Well, we're far away from getting to that point.
I understand.
But some of the people, we would, I think, be able to have a great amusement park. It's a little bit complex because when the weather's bad, nobody goes. In the winter, it's very cold. You're on the beach.
You'd have to build an all season.
Well, you've got to have you. What you want to do is have all year jobs. Now, some will be the summer employment. Some things go up in the summer. Some things you can find ways to do in the winter. Coney Island used to be this phenomenal mecca for tourists. Today, tourists can fly around the world, so there's a lot more competition. On the other hand, there's no reason why Coney Island can't be a place where people can go. The beach on Coney Island is spectacular.
It is.
I mean, it is so clean and so safe. It really is very different than the olden days of, you know, the 70s and 80s. Things really are a lot better. But the amusements have fallen on hard times. And because it's always been up in the air whether their leases would be renewed, nobody wants to make investments in, you know, the future. So we've got to do that. And this is a step. We bought another piece of land.
I should have maybe combined this in our opening segment, and not maybe here. But you last night at the Al Smith dinner, you sat with the two candidates that want to be president of the United States. Do you see either one of them as better for New York City?
I think history shows that you cannot predict whether a Republican or Democratic administration is better for a city. I think both understand that New York is the economic engine, certainly of New York State, and one of the main economic engines of this country. You know, it's like with Supreme Court judges and presidents. You never know. Only history will tell you what they did and how good they were for any one issue. It's very hard in campaigns to find out. In campaigns, they try to focus on what individual groups of voters care about, and they address the current problems, whereas once they get into office, they're going to be future problems. And so I keep saying this again and again and again. I'm not interested in a litmus test as to how they're going to vote on a particular thing. I'm interested in is them to tell me how they could get Congress to go along with the things they want to get done. Because unless you can do it, you can sit there and say, I want a chicken in every pot. Doesn't help you. You got to get Congress to go along. I want them to tell me where the money's going to come from and what things they're not going to be able to do if they do the things they want. And, of course, you never hear that in a campaign. We and blame you and me, all of us. We insist, you know, do you believe in God? Raise your hand. And that's the level of the questioning. And we give them 30.
I've said these debates that need to be, the whole format needs to be changed
or
thrown out.
It doesn't tell you everything. Yeah. I do think, yeah, both are. To say that they're, if you got seated with both, you'd have a very nice evening. They're both smart. They both have come from very different perspectives. They both give the public a real choice, and that's what elections should be.
To your point, though, about having Congress being able to work with Congress, you would think if it's democratically controlled that that would work to Barack Obama rather than John McCain.
That's not always the case. I mean, sometimes it's the president might have more leverage with one house, and I think that, for example, in New York State, I think this city is better off with two parties, one controlling the Senate, one controlling the Assembly, and that will do better for the state, and I've worked hard to see if we can't keep that. I think the governor of New York State is a lot better off if he's got two different parties controlling two houses, because then he has leverage. He can negotiate in trade between the two. If he doesn't have that flexibility, the governor becomes less relevant and the president becomes less relevant. But I don't think there's any chance in national level. The Democrats will control after this election the House and the Senate. But there are within those groups, the Blue Dog Democrats are much more conservative. And you saw when Nancy Pelosi tried to put together a group first time for the bailout bill, she didn't have the votes there. So there is enough different views to give the president some real leverage. The question is, which of the two candidates, and that's one of the things you should think about, will be able to use that leverage to advance their agenda? Because if they can't advance their agenda, all these great speeches, I want this, that, and the other thing, yeah, that's great, but we're not going to have it.
All right, Michael Bloomberg here. We will continue with your questions at 800-321-0710. That's coming up next. This portion of... We continue. It's 5 minutes before 9 o'clock. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here, and so are you. You've got the questions for the mayor. Your headphone right there,
I
sir.
Got it.
And we'll start with Lloyd in Long Island. Hello, Lloyd.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I'd just like to start by saying quickly, I'm a big fan of both you guys, and as an old-time CPA and real estate developer, simple question. Mr. Mayor, have you and or your administration ever considered the feasibility of the city of New York seceding from the state of New York?
No, but I'll tell you. All kidding aside, it was considered way back when the Tweed Courthouse was built. It was originally designed to be a state capital because they had the idea, I don't know for how long, they had the idea of seceding. Number one, the state legislature would have to do it, and given we send them $12 billion a year, that's not likely. Number two, you'd have to change the federal constitution to go from 50 to 51 states. So there are times when we would like to do it. There are times when Marty Markowitz would like to have Brooklyn secede from New York
Staten
City.
Island
and
says they want
to. Staten Island, it's not going to happen.
All right. Thanks a lot for the phone call. Let's see here. Let's go to Marion in the Bronx. Marion, you've got the mayor. Right to your question, please.
All right. Mayor, I have a brownstone in Manhattan. I have no mortgage. We bought it back in the 40s. We have people living there for 47 years and more. They're paying very, very low rents, $500, $600, $800. The building cost me $100,000 to run nowadays.
What's the question, Marion?
Right. How do I manage this without losing my building?
I think, Marion, the answer is down the road, there is inflation. And if we're going to keep the streets safe, we're going to have to pay our cops more with time. We're going to put out fires. We're going to have to do that. Firefighters and correction officers, sanitation, teachers. The bottom line is with inflation and what we need in a modern-day city, our expenses are going to go up. And everybody's going to have to find a ways to do that. I'm not suggesting you should raise your rents, but you have a business with income on one side and expenses on the other. And nobody thinks that it's easy, and my sympathies are with you. Having said that, I just have to keep the city safe. You have to, your workforce has to be able to pay their rent. And that's the balancing act that is always contentious. And you give a little bit to everybody. You take a little bit from everybody. That's sort of what democracy is, another way of phrasing democracy, of coming together where it's a compromise. And it's not easy for you. I'm very sympathetic to that. Having said that, I don't think you can expect it to get any easier.
All right, Marion, thanks a lot. Let's go to Brian here. Brian is in Manhattan. Brian, what's your question? Write to it, please, for the mayor.
Yes, hi. Thank you. Mayor, 50,000 9/11 first responders are sick and dying. 40% of them are without health care. I think this is an absolute tragedy. Why do you think they should wait another year when they've already waited 7 years for treatment?
Well, nobody thinks they should wait another year. We worked very hard to get Congress to pass a bill. We couldn't come to an agreement in the House, but the Senate wasn't going to take it up anyway. So this is something for the next legislative session. New York City has actually been putting an awful lot of money into helping. We can't help everybody, but we have programs for firefighters and for police officers. We've got to find ways to make sure that people who worked on the pile, construction workers and everybody, they get taken care of. Federal government did give us some money. It is certainly not enough. And we tried working very hard. Nancy Pelosi, in all fairness, was very helpful. John Sweeney, the AFL-CIO, and Dennis Hughes worked very hard. And as a matter of fact, I talked to Dennis last night at the Al Smith dinner about exactly this. We have to find a ways to make sure that people can get the kind of care that they need. These are people who, most of them weren't just living in the neighborhood. Most of the people who are really sick actually worked down there much closer. Not totally, but more. And we've got to find a ways to do that.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we're pretty much out of time here. That's going to do it for today. We'll get together here next Friday. And
looking forward to it.
Do you have any parades? No parades
this weekend. I don't know. There's a next parade, probably. There may be one or two, but before it. But the next big parade will be the Thanksgiving Day Parade.
How about that? It is
always the coldest night of the year, the night before, because I go and watch the balloons, and it's freezing, but it is fun.
Enjoy your weekend. We'll see you next Friday. That's going to do it for me, John Gambling, for all of us here on the John Gambling Show. Have a great weekend.
You just heard it.